examining the issues. This is Unleashed with Mark Moreno on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Moreno on TNT. All right, Donald Trump. Could he go to jail? Is he the disgraced multiple times, I've lost count, is it two, three times, impeached president? America must be embarrassed by this president. And Joe Biden, the president who got more votes than any other president in U.S. history, by far the most popular president in the world. Donald Trump, disgraced and hated by Americans. Do you want to see the video evidence? Clip one, crowds turn out for Donald Trump's return to Trump Towers after another day of his trial. Clip one, take a look at this. Now, let's compare that same day, Joe Biden meeting with the public excited. Clip two, there are literally tens of people excited to see Joe Biden in Tampa Bay. Let's take a look. Is something wrong with this picture? Have we been sold a bill of goods? Is perhaps Donald Trump more popular than ever? Did perhaps Donald Trump do better in 2020 than we've been led to believe? Did Joe Biden really get the most votes for president by far of any president in U.S. history? I think it's doubtful. This is what we've been seeing throughout the campaign. I showed you the clip last week where Joe Biden showed up like in a grocery store, a bodega or something, and literally people weren't even just like, oh. And one guy was sitting there like this, just kind of like, he knows there's Secret Service. He knows what will happen to him. And he's just like that. Like he didn't even look up because he must have seethingly couldn't stand Joe Biden. Very upset. But that's the kind of reaction Joe Biden's getting versus Donald Trump. You know, obviously, everything that they're doing to destroy Donald Trump, to get him, is just backfiring. It's just like idiot town to watch this display happen over and over and over again when they just keep coming after him and coming after him, and it keeps backfiring and backfiring and backfiring. So we shall see. And I'm really starting to think the way they're going after RFK Jr., they're very worried. RFK could swing key states. The five key swing states that would have given Donald Trump the presidency, irregardless of election integrity for the moment. All RFK's got to do is pull 5-10% from Joe Biden. I think it was 22,000 votes separated of those states. And Donald Trump wins those. So Democrats are going to do everything they can to take out RFK Jr. And I say that word very carefully, take out, because Biden is still denying him Secret Service protection, which is insane. All right. Well, your TNT host here has gone viral. My appearance on Fox News is the bottom line last Friday night in studio. Washington, D.C. has exploded on the internet to the point where now I'm getting other requests to do multiple Fox News shows. Larry Kudlow, I just got a request from Lou Dobbs, producer. It has gone viral with Wide Awake Media and Nate Silver. I believe it's called Nate Silver on X. The clip is about a minute long. I showed it to you, I believe, or I'm about to show it to you here. There's multiple clips I'm about to show you from my appearance on that Fox show. Actually, it was from last week. I did show it to you. It's about the climate emergency, where in less than a minute, I think it was 56 seconds, I laid out everything. It's all the research I did for my book, The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. And now I'm on the national radio coming up here in a little bit. I was just on Joe Piscopo as well. This would be the story bigger than Donald Trump going to jail. It'd be about equal. The media is really getting interested in this. And even the mainstream media is getting interested. CBS News, I'll have that segment tomorrow on what happens if Joe Biden declares a national climate emergency. And also, as I mentioned, and I believe I showed you yesterday or 2 days ago, the NBC News clip of the climate emergency, whatever it means, giving Joe Biden COVID-like and 9/11-like powers. So there you go. All right. I was on a Fox Business Channel, the Evening Edit, and this was a lot of fun. They were asking me about Joe Biden and national security, the green energy helping with national security or harming. This is going to be clip three, part one of me on Fox News talking Joe Biden's insane energy policies and who it benefits.
Look who's back with us, Mark Moreno. He's the publisher of theclimatedepot.com. Mark, it is so good to see you again. Mark, we need your expertise. We need your big brain on this. Okay, you know this $95 billion foreign aid package, including for Ukraine? You know, the White House was claiming it will crack down on Iran oil exports. But, Mark, when you look at the fine print, it reportedly shows President Biden doesn't have to enforce these sanctions or any crackdown on Iran to avoid gas price hikes within 6 months of a U.S. election. So that means Iran can still fund terrorists attacking U.S. troops, international shipping, and Israel. What do you think of that fine print there?
The fine print is just, you know, I hate to say it, but screw America once again from this administration, especially on energy. You know, they've begged Venezuela, the Middle East for more and more oil at the same time restricting our domestic energy. And when you look at what he's trying to do, you have to wonder, this is the exact opposite of anything in the interest of the United States national security. This is only, could only be blinded by an ideology that believes shutting down American energy is somehow benefits the world. We have the highest environmental standards, okay, the highest human rights standards. Yes, I'm doing my best to just say it like it is. This is Fox Business Channel, so yeah, I'm trying not to be, I don't want to get too technical with this audience. They have plenty of guests that get into the, you know, more into the technical details. I really am trying to reframe this in a mass communication way, public. All right, this is the next clip. Clip four, part two, talking about Biden's energy policy. And I touch on what he's doing recently in Alaska and copper mining. Clip four.
OPEC Plus is considering furthering and extending its production cuts into the second quarter. That means gas will go up. But the Financial Times reports President Biden's decision to pause and delay approvals for new liquefied natural gas projects has really made voters mad in Pennsylvania. The shale gas industry is big in swing state Pennsylvania. It employs 72,000 workers in that state. Pennsylvania, I think it makes something like a fifth of America's natural gas. Is that true?
Pennsylvania is the natural gas success story of the world. And one of the key reasons, by the way, the United States has led the world in reducing our CO2 emissions. It's because of the fracking natural gas revolution there. And one of the things that Joe Biden promised when the war in Ukraine started was that we would help European allies whose energy was being hampered now by the war, supply chain issues with Russia, with our own natural gas exports. And they're cutting that off. So again, nothing makes any sense. He's backing his word on his allies, and he's harming the people of Pennsylvania perhaps the most. And hopefully they'll remember this on Election Day.
Yeah, it just feels like policy incoherence. You know, he's imposing sanctions on Alaskan oil, lifting sanctions on Iranian oil. That doesn't sound coherent. Let's listen to Senator Dan Sullivan of Alaska about the Biden White House putting off limits 13 million acres of land in Alaska. The indigenous people of Alaska want it. They like the jobs. Watch this.
The president won't sanction the Iranian oil and gas regime, but he has no problem sanctioning Alaska. This administration has issued 63 executive orders and executive actions singularly focused on Alaska to shut our state down. Now, that, of course, hurts my constituents. But, Margaret, a national resources, energy, critical minerals, that's an American strength. This should concern all kinds of Americans. You know, I've been in the Senate 9 years. I have never seen such a cynical and dishonest display coming out of any presidency.
Yeah, so how does that make sense? I mean, Senator Sullivan went on to say that regimes that hate the U.S., like China, Venezuela, Iran, they're going to benefit from what Biden is doing. Final word.
Final word is that Alaska restriction also includes access road to a copper mine, a good old U.S. domestic copper mine. China is now record copper production, number three in the world, closely followed by Democrat Republic of Congo. So we are literally shutting down our few rare earth mining in order for China to benefit.
Mark Moreno, thanks for joining us. It's good to see you again.
And that was my segment on Fox Business, trying to lay out this just what's happening in our world. And we're going to have Myron Ebell joining us after the break here in a few minutes. And Myron is now the chairman of the American Lands Council, but he was the senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, longtime director of their CEI Center for Energy and the Environment. So we're going to get his insight on what he thinks from decades of experience of what this Biden energy policy is all about. And the whole yin-yang thing. Trump comes in, undoes everything. Biden comes in, goes all the way back. Now Trump, if he gets elected again, comes in. Can American businesses, can we survive this kind of dial moving back and forth like that? And where's the regulatory certainty that the businesses always talk about that they crave so much? In terms of national security, which is what the Fox host was asking me, there was a study by Center for Strategic International Studies that showed that warm periods coincided with peace and less war. Cold periods, because you have resource scarcity, crop failures, more scramble for those resources, have the most conflict, the highest level of wars that we've seen. And it's interesting because they have it the exact opposite. It was during these, that's why it was called the medieval climate optimum. These are times of peace, prosperity. Cold times bring war and scarcity. And interestingly enough, the greatest national security threat the United States faces is clearly the climate energy policies of the net zero crowd, not a thermometer temperature or alleged extreme weather getting worse and worse and worse. All right. Tucker Carlson on Joe Rogan. It's interesting. They said they are praising Alex Jones. Watch this clip. Give me your thoughts. Blown away by the many shocking predictions of Alex Jones. This is Tucker Carlson on Joe Rogan a few days ago, clip five.
I have to say, your willingness to platform or to have a conversation with Alex Jones, I think was a revolutionary act, actually. Not that everything Alex Jones says is right. It's not. Not everything I say is right or anyone says is right. But Alex Jones is an interesting person. And even if he's not interesting, he has been walled off from the rest of us through name calling. And your willingness to be like, no, actually, we're just going to listen to Alex Jones and you can decide for yourself.
Well, Alex has been my friend for more than 20 years.
But I'm sure you have other friends you haven't invited. And just like, you were not allowed to talk to him. And when you hear Alex Jones talk, you definitely understand why they told you you couldn't listen to Alex Jones.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I had him as one of the first guests when I came over to Spotify.
Love that.
I was like, let's go.
What did they say?
Well, a lot of people weren't happy. We lost sponsors. It was an issue. But I think it did the job. And one of the reasons why he's gone through some issues is because that guy is uncovering real shit that's terrifying every fucking day. When you see so many lies and so much propaganda and so many psyops that are being done on people, you start seeing them where they don't exist. And that's what he did.
And Alex Jones, love him or hate him, he really is the symbol for free speech, because when Twitter, when all the social media took him off, that was the dam that broke when they started coming after everyone with the cancel culture and the fact checks and the misinformation and the labels and the restrictions. It was easy to go after a figure like Alex Jones. And I think what Tucker said to Joe Rogan is absolutely true. Joe Rogan, that was a revolutionary act. Him putting him on his first program, I guess, with his contract there at his podcast. That, because Alex Jones is so controversial, you can't let those kind of voices be silenced. Let them say whatever they want. And you know, and then people can make their own decision. That's what gets frightening about this. And of course, since that time, we've seen the Twitter files with our intelligence agencies getting involved in all the censorship and the collusion with the corporations and the government telling the big tech who to censor, who to remove from social media. It just goes on and on and on. And it really is. That was the lightning rod. Whatever you think of Alex Jones, he was the lightning rod. I believe Tucker is exactly on point with that. All right. We are going to take a break because Myron Ebell is standing by, and I wanted to have him on the show. Longtime friend. He's been with CEI, Competitive Enterprise Institute. He will be back. We're going to talk everything from energy, climate, environment, politics. He was on Trump's EPA transition team, an incredible resume. We'll be right back with Myron Ebell from CEI, formerly, I guess, or he was the former director of the Center for Energy and Environment. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned.
TNT's Kate Shimarani.
You have to be very, very careful with pregnant women when giving them drugs, or women that are breastfeeding, because those drugs will be carried in the breast milk. So why are biological men being given drugs to produce milk, breast milk, that's being fed to the babies in the premature baby unit, SCABU? And they've actually said it's as good as women's milk. I don't see how that is possible, because those drugs that will stimulate the pituitary and everything else that this man is taking are going to be in that breast milk. What could possibly go wrong?
Kate Shimarani on today's News Talk TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Today's News Talk Radio.
Now we're talking!
TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, joining the program now is Myron Ebell, chairman of the American Lands Council. He was the former senior fellow at Competitive Enterprise Institute, longtime director of CEI's Center for Energy and Environment, and he was the go-to man in Washington for legislators, think tanks, media. He was the man who had his pulse on everything climate, energy related, environmental policy. He was with Trump's EPA transition team. And he grew up on a cattle ranch in Oregon. He earned a degree from Colorado College and the London School of Economics, did graduate work at the University of California. He retired just this year, 2024, from CEI. Welcome to the program, Myron.
Hi, Mark. Good to see you.
All right. So are you no longer a denizen of the Washington, D.C. area?
No, I've still got my feet firmly planted in the swamp, but we're spending a little more time out in Eastern Oregon, not Oregon, Eastern Oregon. So
Eastern Oregon. Okay. Explain that.
Trump in my county, Baker County, in 2020 got 74% of the vote while losing Oregon by 15 points or so.
Is Oregon a lost cause politically for, conservatives or Republicans at the moment?
Well, at the moment, yes, but not, over the long term, things change. I mean, remember when Alaska and Hawaii came into the Union in 1959, Hawaii was the Republican state and Alaska was the Democratic state. So things can change, but it takes a while.
Yeah, it would take a while. Yes. All right. Well, so how long were you at CEI? How long did you run the Center for Energy and Environment? What version of that? How many years?
24 years and a bit more. It's too long.
So do the math for me. What presidency would that have been when you started that position? I can't think. Is that
Bill Clinton?
Bill Clinton. Okay. All right. So let's go through this then. Here we are in the United States. When you first started, climate really didn't. I mean, in my view, climate didn't come on the political scene probably till the Rio Earth Summit when it was codified. But let's go back. You know, I guess 1988 would be the watershed year. That was the year James Hansen's testimony, the year the UN IPCC Intergovernmental Panel was formed. What were you doing back then in the 80s? Were you following the pulse of this back then? What was your job pre-that position at the Center for Environment and Climate Policy? Energy
Development. Well, I followed it by reading newspapers and going to events, but I was mostly working on other environmental issues, particularly related to property rights and to federal land management or really mismanagement.
Did you ever think that climate would sort of become, as junk science Steve Malloy once said, it sort of became the all-in on climate. They were going to put everything in the kitchen sink. They basically just, every other environmental issue fell to the wayside once climate became front and center. Did you expect that, having worked on a lot of these other issues?
Well, you know, Mark, the interesting thing, and I think I didn't realize it fully until I read one of Rupert Darwall's books, is that the environmental movement was not really happy with climate change and was not bought into it for a number of years because they thought it was going to suck all the oxygen out of their rooms on real environmental issues, like the Endangered Species Act or the Clean Air Act. And so it wasn't until they realized that, hey, we can get further by turning everything into climate, that they really bought into it.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what happened. I mean, I've interviewed Dennis Rancourt, the sort of left-wing professor, University of Ottawa, I believe, has said global warming hijacked the entire environmental agenda. And if you look at the actual Gallup polls of American voters, among environmental issues, climate change ranked dead last every year in Gallup polling behind clean air, clean water, species extinction, deforestation. Does that surprise you? Do you think the public just doesn't care that much about climate versus other environmental issues?
You know, these polls are astonishing in that number that climate ranks at the bottom has continued as the climate drumbeat and the megaphone has gotten much bigger, and all of corporate America has bought into it. And they, you know, people are told every day that every issue is a climate issue by the mainstream, the corrupt corporate media. And so, you know, it is surprising that it's still at the bottom of people's public concerns, including other environmental issues.
What do you rate that? Is that, do you think that's just the law of diminishing returns? Almost like the more they attack Donald Trump with every weapon of, you know, prosecutors, the more popular he becomes and the more martyrized. Do you think it's the same principle with the more they try to scare you with climate, the more people just dismiss it as a concern?
It's something of a mystery. And I think a lot more, you know, research and understanding is needed. But one thing I would say is that, you know, a lot of Americans like me and like you live sort of in a, you know, we live on computer screens and at keyboards, and we don't actually experience weather very much. Yes. A lot of Americans actually have, you know, do real work, and they labor, and they're on ranches or farms or in the woods or in the mines or on the roads. Or doing deliveries, so they actually experience weather, and so they see through the climate bunk. It's just bunk, right? And so real Americans, the kind of people that are increasingly working class Americans that are increasingly moving to the right politically, they get it. I'd say the semi-educated, semi-elite, the kind of managerial class, the people who like us, work at keyboards and computer screens, they're much more susceptible to the propaganda. So I think there's a real divide in America between the people who experience weather and don't believe the climate bunk, and people who buy into it because they don't actually have much real experience.
Yeah. I guess they'd call us the laptop class.
That's really good. Yes.
I've referred to it, and it's true. I mean, you know, I missed the eclipse last week because I was here at this studio here doing this. All right, so let's go back in time then. How has the climate change, how have you witnessed the climate change debate changing? If you were, I recall Al Gore in the 90s always talking about, we don't need restrictions. This is an opportunity for entrepreneurs and we're going to make money. And he sort of carried that over. But nowadays they're telling us, you know, we have to have shirts made of human hair. We have to limit 3 new items of clothing. We have to ban gas-powered cars. Every appliance has to be restricted, regulated. You got to ban lawn equipment, leaf blowers that are gas powered. We can't eat. We have to severely restrict meat. CNN's calling for carbon passports. What in the world happened? Originally, you know, I was watching old clips of Carl Sagan from the 80s. They called it the greenhouse effect. It was a wonkish debate between scientists, you know, maybe treated like the Clean Air Act, but somewhere along the way, and maybe you could help us with this, but you witnessed, how did it become an issue that government needs to pass some, maybe some regulations and then move on to, this is going to be the end all be all in the complete, you know, planning of every aspect of our lives. When did this happen? Was it a slow evolution or did you know from the beginning back during the Clinton years that this is where it was headed?
Well, Mark, you and I have had a lot of the same experiences from somewhat different viewpoints in Washington, D.C. But I think the main thing that's happened is there is more of the, it's going to be a complete revolution in human society. We have to deindustrialize, depopulate, all these things. But on the other hand, what's really changed in D.C., I think, is the complete preemption or capture of corporate America and corporations all over the world. They have figured out that the environmental movement or the climate movement have figured out how to give handouts. You have both carrots and sticks. You have mandates and handouts for big corporations who manufacture things, and they're all bought into it now, right? I mean, I'm sure you've talked about this many times. I mean, the auto industry, with one or two exceptions like Toyota, is totally captured. They're buying all this stuff because they have these huge mandates from CAFE standards and the Clean Air Act to electrify all their vehicles. And at the other hand, they're getting huge subsidies for people who buy electric vehicles. So, I don't know whether any of them believe it. I don't know whether the oil industry believes it, but they all talk the talk now, and they're all prepared to get whatever handouts are available. And of course, the so-called Inflation Reduction Act is sort of all the handouts are now forever.
I remember when the Inflation Reduction Act first passed, you contacted me to sort of correct me, or I remember it was at a Q&A and you were absolutely right. It wasn't, the Inflation Reduction Act just isn't about Washington spending money. It's about them targeting that money for possibly decades in the future. And the latest stat on the Inflation Reduction Act I saw was, what was it authorized for? 200 and some billion dollars, allegedly.
No, it's all open-ended. The Congressional Budget Office initial estimate was like $290 billion over 10 years. And then Goldman Sachs came out and said it's $1 trillion. And now it's maybe $2 trillion. Who knows?
Yeah, last I saw was $1.2 trillion. So it's an open-ended checkbook to essentially, you know, just pick winners and losers and go into the green energy sector and keep this whole thing going. I guess I didn't realize the huge import of that. And of course, that required the caving of Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Do you have any insight onto what happened there? He was like a rock until he wasn't. He caved. I know Bill Gates got involved, made some promises. I know Senate leadership made promises to Joe Manchin. But why did Joe Manchin give in and collapse on that Inflation Reduction? By the way, we had Bill McKibben wanted to name a geologic epic or era of the earth after Joe Manchin for preventing this pork barrel of the Inflation Reduction Act. They were going to call it the Manchusine, the Anthropocene, the Manchusine, the Jurassic. But of course, he caved. Why did he cave? That was probably one of the most significant caves of a politician in years when he did that.
Well, I think you've hit it, a lot of pressure. But, historically, Senator Manchin and previously Governor Manchin before that, yes. He always caved, right? He always caved to the Democratic majority, even though he comes across as a moderate conservative. I think another thing is he actually does believe the climate story that we're in a crisis. I think he believes it. And I think the third thing is he actually gave an interview some months after the passage of the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. And he said, well, you know, all my colleagues on the Democratic side stopped talking to me in the Senate. And that was just really more than I could stand. You know, poor guy. So, you know, that's what he always does. He caves. We thought a lot of people in the summer of 2022 before he caved thought, well, it's going to be different this time because, you know, West Virginia is a fossil fuel state, a coal state, and a natural gas state. It can't survive with. But in the end of the day, he did what he always does.
Wow. Well, he had held strong, though, surprisingly, I thought, for several years, and at least a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And then he gave. Mm-hmm. You said something important. You talked about the corporations, the auto companies all following these lines. When did, in your time in Washington, when did you witness this sort of complete corporate capture takeover, pre-woke agenda? I mean, this is long before that. When did they just start towing the line on this climate nonsense? And how important is it when a corporation doesn't toe the line? Is that what we should be focusing on, like putting pressure on corporations? Not because I'm sick of getting on a United Airlines flight and hearing or seeing the ads or our carbon footprint, or buying something on Amazon where you see, you know, the earth-friendly carbon certification, or just reading that it's just such crap. And you mentioned Toyota. I played on this show like a week or two ago, a mid-level or senior vice president Toyota executive who was pushing back on the EV mandates, but at the same time, he was saying things like, we know everyone wants a limit. We want to meet our climate goals, and that's what we're here to do. He sounded like a cheerleader for the UN or for Joe Biden's climate policy. Why do they do that? And how important is it that we stop that? Because it seems to me, if you can change the narrative from the corporate culture, that's how you can start changing policy. How do we get corporations to stand up to this nonsense?
I have no idea. Let me go back to your earlier question. Look, you were involved in this when you were working for Senator Inhofe, you were intimately a close-up observer of this. But if you recall, after the Kyoto Protocol negotiations in 1997, basically all of American industry belonged to a big coalition called the Global Climate Coalition. And they were out to stop Kyoto, stop Senate ratification of the Kyoto Protocol. And, you know, on the nonprofit free market conservative side, the Cooler Heads Coalition was created. And I later became chairman of the Cooler Heads Coalition, and you were a longtime member of it. Yes. But corporate America gave up at some point in the early 2000s, a few years after Kyoto. First of all, it became clear that Kyoto would never be ratified by the U.S. Senate, in a large part because of the efforts of Senator Jim Inhofe, a truly great American, a friend of mine and your close friend and former employer.
Yeah.
I mean, he really turned the Senate around on Kyoto by doing the work, which no other senator or member of Congress has done. So some corporations became, well, we don't need to do anything because it's never going to happen. Other corporations figured out, hey, we can make a lot of money off of this. Renewable energy is not commercially viable, but if we get enough federal involvement in it, we can make money by scamming the energy system by building windmills and solar panels everywhere. So some corporations lost interest because they thought victory was inevitable. Others lost interest because they thought that they could make a killing from federal handouts. So I don't know how we get them back because, as you know, they've been completely taken over by the so-called woke agenda, which nobody really knows what that means, but it's, you know, it's leftism in general and climatism in particular.
Yeah, I mean, I would call it a corporate government collusion. In the case of automakers, you know, how many, has anyone kept track if anyone actually voted for the banning of gas-powered cars? I mean, did the EU actually have a vote? I don't think the California legislature has yet voted. The U.S. Congress never passed it. This was all decided by executive order, unelected bureaucrats, California Air Resources, the trigger laws of what, 17, 18 states with the District of Columbia following suit. And then, of course, Biden's EPA. You then have corporate bank in Australia say they're not going to give out a car loan if you buy a gas-powered car. You have Nicholas Stern at a World Bank meeting say that we had to come up with a timetable basically to end financing for the creation production of gas-powered cars. So you got the World Bank, you have corporate banks to consumers, you have all these unelected bureaucrats. Was there any democracy involved that you're aware of to ban gas-powered cars or come up with timetables to phase out gas-powered cars anywhere in the world?
Well, I think the European Union is, you could say, look, the European Union commission, the European Commission is not really accountable. Maybe the European Parliament is accountable, but the European Commission has gone pretty far down this road.
They're unelected bureaucrats, though, right? Is that what we're talking
about? Well, they're not bureaucrats, but they're not.
But they're unelected. They're not voted. They're not. That's what I'm just trying to.
Well, they're voted by. It's a complicated process in the European Union, how the commission is picked. They are kind of ratified. There is a little bit of accountability, but they're not really. The car ban is the gas powered car ban is the way they've gotten so far is because the public doesn't believe it. People who buy cars don't believe it's actually going to happen. And now it's happening and they're going, well, it's not going to work. And I'll still be able to buy that big pickup truck I want. Of course, that big pickup truck you want now costs $70,000 or $80,000. Whereas a few years ago, it costs $40,000 or $50,000. And not too far back beyond that, it costs $30,000. But I'll still be able to buy it. And so people think that that's true, and pretty soon they're going to find out that the automakers have to jack up the prices of big rigs like pickup trucks and big SUVs so much in order to pay for all their losses on electric vehicles. So you're not going to, they may still be on the lot, but not a lot of people are going to be able to afford them if things keep going the way they are. And that's why we have to get rid of the current regime here in the United States.
Well, at some point, did these corporate executives start drinking the Kool-Aid and actually believe the public was clamoring for EVs? You have the example of the Hertz CEO, who was touted as the guy who brought in a huge fleet of EVs, and then within a couple years had to literally get rid of their EVs for two reasons, which are devastating if you're in the rental car business: high maintenance costs and lack of consumer demand. But this was a guy who thought he was going to be the revolutionary, you know, executive of Hertz and bring in all these EVs, and the public didn't care. How did they miscalculate that? They just started believing the hype and the media and academia. Well, how do you explain that?
I rent from Hertz quite regularly, and we're here out in Eastern Oregon now, and we don't own a big pickup truck, so I have one rented from Boise Airport. It's a Jeep Wrangler or something like that. It's a medium sized pickup.
Those are nice, but removable top, and yeah, those are nice.
It's great. I'd like to own one, but they're too expensive. Hertz went bankrupt, and they came out of bankruptcy, and they were going to be a different kind of company somehow. And I think that they brought in new leadership, and they did drink the Kool-Aid on EVs. And it was funny, as I was renting vehicles from Hertz, they kept having more and more specials. You know, they were almost giving them away. I rented a Tesla and a Kia, and my wife and I did. And the Tesla was fine, the Kia was fine, but you get into it and it isn't charged at 100%, it's charged at 80%. And then you immediately start having anxiety about getting it charged. Because now, if I driven it out of the Hertz garage at 100%, I might have felt very differently about it than when it was 80%. And so they made some mistakes, let's put it that way. And it's a good lesson. It's a good lesson. Everybody ought to be. Everybody in corporate America ought to be paying attention to that. They lost their shirts.
Yes. Okay. When you look at the history of you know, the Model T and how that sort of became the common man, freedom of movement in the U.S. You had all the mom and pop gas stations pop up all over the country. The Biden administration is approaching these EV mandates as a way of doing a national charging grid. Does that concern you that maybe the next virus outbreak, instead of issuing stay-at-home orders once they've banned gas-powered cars, this is a fantasy, the green fantasy world, they can just shut off the national grid and, you know, make it so you can't charge your car, all the national charging stations, instead of having a ban on interstate travel, which is one of the things the Biden administration proposed. Do you think that is workable, what they're trying to plan through Pete Buttigieg, this whole idea of the national federal charging grid? I know it's been a disaster so far. Billions spent, I think they may have up to six or something like that, outlets actually put in place or something. But how do you see a national charging grid working for EVs?
Well, you know, I think, Mark, you and I have forgotten how much federal funding there was for all those gas stations being built and all those, you know, people got big handouts for buying Model Ts, right? Well, no, of course they didn't. The market followed what people wanted and what technology was available. I mean, Henry Ford was the most famous and admired person in the world for decades, even though he was, you know, politically kind of objectionable. I mean, he was a terrible anti-Semite, for example. But he was the most admired and most famous person in the world for what he did and for providing what people discovered they wanted. You don't see any of that with EVs, right? There's no clamor for them. So is it going to work? No, of course it's not going to work. You know, the federal government has a long record of throwing billions and tens of billions and hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer money for things people don't want, and it doesn't work. It's not going to work this time. And as you know, and I'm sure I've seen a lot of stuff you've done on this, that as we have more and more EVs and more chargers, the electrical grid is becoming more and more unreliable and expensive. So we've got a lot of wind plantations and solar plantations, and they are making the electricity both less reliable and more expensive at the same time. So if we start having power outages, what are people going to do if they need to charge their EV? They're going to be, you know, look, as you know, Mark, most people who own EVs own two or three other vehicles. Yes. People who own one car or one pickup truck, they're not going to buy an EV because they can't count on it. So it's a luxury item. It sort of feeds into people's good feelings about themselves. It also, they're practical if you have a regular commute and you can charge it at home every night or every couple of days. But people are never going to have just one EV. They're going to have a gas powered car and an EV as kind of a luxury.
Yeah, in fact, the Toyota executive, the interview I played, he actually admitted in there that everyone, they've pretty much saturated the people interested in EVs at the moment, and the people buying them now are buying them as, you know, maybe a second EV. I think they've reached the end of the line, no matter how many subsidies and mandates. But we have to take a break. We're talking with Myron Ebell, former director of the Center for Energy and Environment, the Cooler Heads Society of Competitive Enterprise Institute, current chairman of the American Lands Council. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano. We'll be right back. I want to talk to him a little bit more about energy and the war on agriculture and some of the wisdom from his decades of experience fighting this battle on Capitol Hill and in Washington, D.C. So we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi. I'm your retirement fear, but don't be scared. You're still in pre-retirement.
Pre-retirement? Does that mean I have more time to plan?
Precisely. Here, this is pre-retirement.org. Huh.
Retirement savings options? Oh. Potential tax breaks?
Yep. Boo.
Oh, I could build up savings for my side hustle. This isn't scary. I'm doing it.
You got this.
Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan.
Prescription drug pricing points to corporate mountain.
Freedom of the press is about your right to know. It's about your right to be informed. Today,
no.
There are real threats to press freedom.
It is reaching residential areas.
And your right to know about the world around us. We must protect our right to know, no matter what kind of news is important
to
you.
Question.
Before it's too late, understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Mark Morano is unleashed, and he's taking on the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, and the United Nations on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We're continuing our discussion with Myron Ebell, Chairman of the American Lands Council, longtime Competitive Enterprise Institute, Director of the Center for Energy and Environment, the Cooler Heads Coalition, which met monthly in Washington, D.C. All right, Myron, let's finishing up just with the transportation issue. You have cities like Oxford, other places with these 15-minute cities, which on the surface sound okay. You know, I can work, go to school, live all within 15-minute cities, which on the surface sound okay. You know, I can work, go to school, live all within 15 minutes, all walkable. I don't need a car. But you know, they also now penalizing people for leaving. You have France banning flights last year of 2.5 hours or less. There's proposals in the EU to ban flights even longer, forcing people into cars and trains, literally directly labeled as ways to fight climate change. You have the German transport minister maybe floating the idea to create controversy, but a weekend car ban travel because they're not meeting their climate goals in Germany. What is going on? Is this, could any of this actually happen, or are more people just, once the public is actually aware of any of these schemes, are they going to fight back? And how did France get away with banning flights at 2.5 hours or less?
Well, France has, you know, an extremely well-developed and highly subsidized rail system, and
right, sir.
Distances are fairly short, so you know, it can be okay to take a train. You know, I mean, they're pretty efficient. You know, I've lived in cities and places. I was a graduate student in Cambridge, England, for a number of years, and it was a 15-minute city for me. But I didn't own a car. You couldn't really own one unless you had a lot of money inside the central part of town. But I could walk or bike everywhere. It was great. But it's not so great for most people who don't live in an ancient medieval city that has everything close and densely populated. Most people want to, in America at least, want to have a single family house with a yard and a garden and place for the kids to play in, a garage and a car, and so it doesn't make much sense. The idea of forcing people into little boxes in high rises so that they can walk everywhere or take a subway or a bus is really part of, you know, it goes way back to the American Planning Association's model for what we should all be living, except wealthy people who can get away with whatever they want. But most of us should be forced into high-rise dwellings. This goes back a long way in thinking, and it's ultimately socialist planning. And it's really anti-American, in my view. And so we should resist it. It's not going to work. It's good for some people in some places like San Francisco. But it's not good for most of us. So I think we really need to push back on it.
All right, now let's talk about food briefly. You have Bill Gates, at least as of a couple of years ago, was the single largest farmland owner, still small relative to everything. And then you have China was also very close behind Bill Gates buying up U.S. farmland. Jeff Bezos, surprisingly, is buying up farmland. But what's interesting about Bill Gates is he stated in an MIT Technology Review interview that he wanted all the Western nations to move off animal agriculture, beef, and go to what he calls the synthetic meat, which could be the vegetable oil process, or what he and Richard Branson have invested billions in, the lab-grown meat, which the FDA just approved for human consumption last year. So what is Bill Gates doing gobbling up farmland? What is China doing? Should we be concerned about that? And what does John Kerry mean when U.S. agriculture has to be in the sight now of net zero? In Europe, we know they came after nitrogen fertilizer thus potentially affecting high-yield crops. And they're coming after methane animal agriculture, going after meat. What's going to happen here? What is happening with U.S. agriculture if this continues?
The first thing I'd say is it doesn't bother me, or I don't worry about the fact that some very wealthy individual wants to buy a lot of land. It was Ted Turner. I mean, before that was the Rockefellers a long time ago. Ted Turner more recently, now Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, the Chinese Communist Party, whatever. The federal government owns 645 million acres of land. Managed by the four federal land agencies, plus more by Department of Defense and so on. That's the four federal land agencies have 27% of the country, the land in the country. Most of it's in the West and in Alaska. Now, that worries me because there's a huge amount of mismanagement involved in all those federal land managers in the Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, the Fish and Wildlife Service, and the National Park Service. That's why we're having catastrophic fires every year out west now. It's not climate change, it's federal land mismanagement. Private land they don't have catastrophic fires except when it's a bleed over from federal land. So why are they doing this, and why do they think that farming and ranching can go to net zero? Well, first of all, it should be understood that a lot of the cattle production in this country is on rangeland, on grasslands that otherwise wouldn't be farmed. So if you go to something besides eating a lot of beef, you're going to have those grasslands are going to turn into brush, and they're going to then start burning catastrophically, just like our forests do now. So I don't think Bill Gates knows what he's doing. And I think, maybe you ought to listen to some farmers and ranchers about how to manage all these hundreds of thousands of acres that he's buying, because I don't think he knows much about it. Maybe he's hiring the right managers who do know. But he has some kind of wacky ideas, not all of them bad, but most of them bad. And he needs to learn a little bit before he buys a lot more land.
Yeah. Okay, we're running out of time, sadly, but I want to ask a couple of key questions here just about lessons. We have a couple prominent climate skeptics claiming we are winning the climate debate. Climate skeptics are winning. Victory is at hand. Do you believe that? I sure don't. But what are your thoughts on it? Do you think climate skeptics are winning? I think a lot of us declared victory when Trump won in 2016. But what are your thoughts now in 2024?
Well, it's a very hard question. I think climate realists have won the scientific debate, but nobody knows that. And that's because the alarmists, the doomsters, have control of all the major institutions and all of the big megaphones. Now, I hope your megaphone here, TNT Radio, becomes bigger and bigger. But for now, you have to understand that we're really outgunned and the funding is more. It used to be 10 to 1 against us. Now it's way above 100 to 1 against us.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's 1,000 to 1. And so we're winning the scientific debate, and we're winning the debate with the public that isn't susceptible to the propaganda from the big megaphones in social media and the corrupt mainstream media. As I said, the semi-educated, semi-elite, what you call the laptop class or the managerial class, they are very susceptible to the propaganda. Most Americans are not. So I think we're losing the political debate as long as the so-called Inflation Reduction Act is in force. It has to be repealed. Every Republican voted against it, and every Republican in the House voted to repeal it. All those subsidies, all the federal handouts, that funds the climate industrial complex. There's no way around that. So as long as they have all the money, we're in a bad way. And the other thing is we have to change our presidential administration and our Congress. Until that happens, they're going to keep wasting our money and claiming that it's all being successful. And, you know, yeah, don't worry. We close all our conventional power plants and have a lot of windmills. It'll all be good. Well, it won't, and you know it won't. And the experience is it won't.
All right. Well, thank you. We're out of time. Unfortunately, we didn't even scratch the surface of what I wanted to get to. I'd like to have you back on some point, maybe right before the election or so. But Myron Ebell, chairman of the American Lands Council, former director of CEI Center for Energy and Environment. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us today, Myron.
Thank you, Mark. Good, great to see you.
This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll be right back. Thanks a lot. Stay tuned.